God help us all. The Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast is about to begin. The Medicare podcast for those who are three sheets to the wind. He watches reruns of The Banana Splits and Pee-wee's Playhouse, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Yes, you're right, Randy. They all look the same at age 6 months. You know, who cares if somebody makes a mistake and says it's a girl instead of a boy? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Randy and I were just discussing the relative merits of putting a headband on your female baby so that everybody else knows that it's a female. And frankly, my opinion is, who cares if they know what it is? Eventually, that female is going to be able to assert herself and tell everybody that she's a liberated woman. So enjoy the period of time where she's a small child and forget the headbands. That's just silly. Anyway, the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, you just heard who I am as announced by our magnificent Canadian announcer who does all of our intros, Drew McMillan, my nephew. I am, of course, Doug Jones. My reputation probably preceded me. I am your expert for all of this week. Every episode podcast episode we're doing this week, I will be your Medicare expert. And we are here to help people who are approaching Medicare to understand that it doesn't have to be really scary. It doesn't have to be time-consuming. It doesn't have to be frightening. It doesn't even have to really consume that much of your time and energy. We are here to sugarcoat the whole process, to spoon feed you the knowledge that you need, and to dispense with the knowledge that you don't need in order to make your Medicare decisions. And when I say we, I'm generally talking about me and Randy Carson, our podcast engineer and bon vivant. Hello, Randy.
Doug, hey, you know, I can't help but ask a question.
Oh, boy. Does it have anything to do with the headbands that people put on girl babies?
Yes, it does.
All right.
Very closely related to that.
All right.
I have heard that all babies look like Winston Churchill. Did he wear a headband?
He didn't, but he wore a bowler hat in many of the pictures I've seen. He wore a tuxedo.
Babies should have a bowler hat, huh?
Well, you know, do they really want to make their babies look like Winston Churchill? What you do is you give them a big old stogie, light it up for them, and let the kids smoke that.
Yeah.
Did you ever see those twins in, God, I forget what they call the country now, but it used to be, not Thailand, Cambodia? No. There were a couple of twins in a guerrilla army who smoked like chimneys. You think you and I used to smoke? These kids, they're like 8 years old, and they're smoking up a storm. I don't know where they get the cigarettes.
Probably the GIs.
But, you know, Winston was great. He was good for smoking cigars. And so if you want your baby to look distinguished, put a bowler on him or her, and give him a cigar.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. It would certainly make them memorable.
Absolutely, and we don't know this, generally speaking, in the States, but in World War I, where Winston Churchill was, I think, first Lord of the Admiralty, he had a lot of political power. He wasn't an old dude either. He engineered an amphibious assault on the coast of Turkey. The area was called Gallipoli. And the assault was called Gallipoli, and he envisioned it as being like Normandy would have been 20 years later. So they got all of these Allied soldiers to assault this area of Turkey, and those guys were just mowed down. The Turks had the beat on them, and there was tremendous loss of life. They dug in for a while, but they finally were forced out of the area, and they had to get back on their ships and sail away. That was looked at as the end of Winston Churchill's career, because it was such a disaster and led to so much loss of life for no gain whatsoever. And somehow he managed to position himself to take over as, you know, the head English dude, as Bill and Ted might say, at the beginning of World War II. So wow. he pulled it out of the fire.
I didn't know that piece of history.
If you Google it, you'll read about it. It was just poorly, poorly executed.
There was a book. I haven't read it, but there was a book. I think Winston Churchill wrote it. And my understanding is that it's a soup to nuts A to Z description of the entire Churchill family way back till there was no Churchills. And it's amazing, if you like genealogy, it's amazing all the connections that we had over here to the Churchill family over in England.
Absolutely. It was a well-positioned family, and it was one that, you know, not royalty, but they were nobility, I think. That's probably what they would be viewed as. But I believe a lot of relatives, a lot of their Churchill relatives emigrated to the States. And that's not surprising to hear that. But look up Gallipoli sometime if you want to read about a disaster that almost derailed his political career.
I will. I love that kind of history. So in the meantime, should we talk about some Medicare?
Well, I think we have to, because we made a pledge to our listeners to get after it in fairly short order. So what I thought I'd do today is pretty darned exciting. Often people think about having to buy insurance, and they only think about the expenditure. They don't think about the actual act of acquiring the insurance policy itself. So because of state law, there's always going to be a licensed insurance agent involved in the process that you have to deal with. Now, it may be that it's somebody sitting in a booth at a telephone center, a call center, or it could be somebody like me who has had 45 years of insurance experience and tries to maintain an air of professionalism. But both people will put you through the same garbage, and it's called an application. There's a bunch of people, I think they're like mole. They never see the sun. They don't ever actually gain vitamin D like normal people do. They're trapped inside an office. They're locked up. Blinds are drawn. It's totally dark except for their headlamps, their little visor lamps. And they are called insurance underwriters. They sit in rooms and go through paper, and they look at what's written on the paper. And their goal in life typically is to turn down risk. An insurance company is supposed to cover risk so that if there's a bad thing that happens, you get paid for it, you get reimbursed for it, and you're not out a lot of money. But insurance company underwriters are hired with their skills at refusing to accept risk as one of the measurements of their success in the business. And in fact, I used to have a Department of Women underwriters that I referred to every one of them as Madam No. And Madam No was in the comic books or something as an evil Asian temptress. But the insurance underwriters that I knew were basically in business to say no. And I would bring them another prospect and they would say, nope, we don't want that one. Too much risk for the company to accept. So what we do to communicate with these underwriters is we extract information, answers to questions from the person who wants to buy insurance. So let's assume that Randy is an insurance prospect. He is turning 65, and he wants a Medicare supplement plan because he's listened to our podcast, he has read my book, and he knows that only losers buy Medicare disadvantage plan. So he's going to buy a Medicare supplement plan from me. Now, Randy's perking up in there. I interrupted his nap, and I'm sorry, Randy. No need to, you don't really have to participate. I'm just using you as an example.
Well, I'm making lots of notes about my future question.
Okay, well, that's good because I do enjoy answering your questions. So here's the deal. People think that they can sign their name to a sheet of paper and the whole process is done. the insurance person like me knows that it's a painful, painful process, very much like surgery, where I have to take this insurance customer of mine and almost surgically extract organs from their body in the form of knowledge and answers to questions, some of which are almost ridiculous. And I have to do this without irritating my client, because I want them to feel good about me having represented them as their agent. So here I am with a stack of paper called an insurance application. And I have specific instructions from the insurance company. This is just one insurance company, but it happens to be one of our favorite because we're going to be using it extensively in California. I've used it in Ohio and Illinois so far because their rates are very attractive. In other words, if the customer can survive the application process, they're going to find that the rates for the product are very, the cost of the product is very attractive. But I'm forced by the company to extract all kinds of information from the client. And so this starts out with page one of the application. I have to ask them these questions. What effective date do you want your, in other words, what date do you want your insurance to start? What is the effective date? Which insurance plan do you want? Now, I probably already know that after having discussed it, but some people don't want to discuss their personal situations that much with a stranger like me, and I have to discuss it. I have to draw them out in order to be able to answer these questions accurately and to make sure that we avoid having them go without insurance for any period of time or paid for double insurance. In other words, if they've still got an employer plan, and we start their Medicare insurance too quickly, they're going to be paying for two insurance plans, one of which they don't need, and I want to avoid that. So to move on through the application, what mode of premium would the client like to pay? Annually, semi-annually, quarterly, monthly? Almost all of them say monthly, but then when they think about it, they say, change that. Well, it's not that easy to change things. I've got to get your initials next to the scribbled, change, and then I've got to mark the correct one. I've got to put my initials there. And then we go to the next question, method of payment. There are two methods with this particular company. Either the company can send bills to the individual, or they can have the money withdrawn from their bank account. Now, because I like to fax in, I'm kind of old school, and I like to fax the application to the insurance company, to these underwriters, the mole people that are hiding from the daylight with their green eye shades and their headlamps. They won't let me email it because they'll say, sensitive personal information, like the person's social security number and all that, might not be safe in the email, but it's perfectly safe when faxed. So I'm going to have to tell these people the company rule is you have no choice. We're going to start with an automatic payment plan that allows me, because of the company rules, to fax the application to the underwriters. And then once your coverage is approved, we will telephone them and say, could you change from automatic payment plan, meaning withdraw from the bank account, change that to premium notice, send a premium notice in the mail, and depends on what mode, annually, semi-annually, but they got to make sure that we don't forget to do that if the customer would rather get a bill and write a check and mail it back in. Then since we're doing an automatic payment plan, we have to answer the question, what day of the month would they like to have the money drafted from their account? Now, the rates for this product are so small, like $33 a month for a 65-year-old. It shouldn't have a big impact on their budget, but it's something I have to find out in case they have a preferred day of the month. Maybe their Social Security check comes in on a certain date, so they don't want the money drawn before that. I don't know, but it's one of the many, many things I have to ask. So then we have the applicant's first name, middle initial, and last name. The company doesn't allow me to put it in any other form. They can't be like G. Gordon Liddy because there's only one little blank, one letter for a middle initial. So in this case, it would be George G. Liddy. That's the only way we could do it. with his street address, his residence address, and then does he have a different mailing address? Well, we'd have to put that address in too. Then we need his social security number, his date of birth, and his age last birthday in case the person's kind of a dope and can't do the math in their head. And it's kind of easy to make that mistake. So, and then what sex are they? Are they male? Are they female? What email address do they prefer to use? And then because this company wants to call and check to make sure that I, as the dopey insurance agent, didn't do anything, you know, wrong, or I dotted the I's and crossed the T's, they want to know what time of day the person would like to receive a call checking up and just verifying some of the information on the application. They are going to say, "We'd like, would you like to do it between 8 a.m. and noon, or between noon and 6 p.m., or between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m.?" So I've got to find out from my client which of those three time periods is the best for them, and then what number the underwriters should use. But that's just page one. We've got about 10 more pages to go, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want to go get a drink, I'll just keep plowing through all this and come on back and join us when you can. But we're on page two, and these are eligibility questions. And this looks almost the same as every other Medicare supplement company's application. So I think these questions are mandated by the federal government. Generally, they don't get too deeply involved in a state insurance project or a product like this, but in this case, all of the Medicare supplement applications that I've seen pretty much have the same set of questions. To the best of your knowledge, question number one, did you turn age 65 in the last 6 months? Yes or no? Did you enroll in Medicare Part B in the last 6 months? Yes or no? If yes, what is the effective date of your Part B coverage? What is your Medicare claim number? Most people call it the Medicare identifier, and it's got a bunch of letters and numbers. It used to be that your Medicare card had your Social Security number on it, but a bunch of people got worried about the security, so now they have a computer-generated alphanumeric identifier that's on your Medicare card. And hopefully you've already got your Medicare card, because they will not issue a Medicare supplement to you if you don't already have Part A and Part B on you, you know, covering you starting at a certain date, and then you'll have your Medicare identifier on the same ID card. Question two, are you covered through the state Medicaid program? In other words, do you have welfare paying for your medical bills and your medical insurance? And the answer to that typically is no, because I don't deal with people who need that sort of assistance, but yet I have to ask it anyway, because they'll probably call call the client and ask them if I asked that question. Was he very thorough? Oh, yes. So I drag them through this whole page. If you said yes to this question, blah, 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 will they pay your premiums for the Medicare supplement policy? Yes or no? And it just goes on and on and on. So I try to shorten it up a little bit, but I don't want to beat people to death with the minutiae of this. Question three, if you had coverage from any Medicare plan other than original Medicare within the past 63 days, for example, a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare HMO or PPO, which would be Medicare Advantage. I mean, let's be redundant, shall we? Fill in your start date and end dates below. If you're still covered under this plan, leave the end date blank. Well, people, if I gave them this paperwork and I said, fill this out for yourself, they would read about half of that, start marking things because they say, oh, here, this must be what they're looking for. I have a perfect case, a gentleman in California, great guy, but he marked a few things that I wouldn't have marked. And frankly, his paperwork's going to wind up in California, and I don't want to have whiteout all over it. So I'm going to have to fill out a couple of pages on my own that don't require his signature, and then send those in with his application. He meant well, but he didn't think like an insurance lawyer or an insurance underwriter would think. So all I've got to do is thinking for him. Question four, do you have another Medicare supplement policy in force? That was a big problem years ago, and the politically active people used it as leverage to have the government take more control, because what unscrupulous agents were doing was finding people that had mental problems that were entering dementia, and they would sell them several policies and collect several commissions at a time. And that, you know, frankly, all over this thing, it says you only need one Medicare supplement policy. That was the door that was pried open to allow the federal government to step in and standardize Medicare supplement plans. So, do you have another Medicare supplement policy? No, I don't. Okay, you're good to go. If you do, tell me what company you have so I can contact them and tell them you've been ripped off. Then question five, if you had coverage under any other health insurance within the past 63 days, then the question is 63 days from today or 63 days from that date in the future when my new Medicare supplement goes into effect? And the answer is B to that. But that's unspoken. That's in my head. I have to get the people to answer this question with respect to the future date in which their new coverage is going to go into effect, because frankly, there is a period of time longer than 63 days that they're going without qualified insurance. Then all of a sudden, they will have a waiting period before their pre-existing conditions are covered. And my goal in life is to avoid them making that mistake, because they're going to get really mad at me if they find out that a medical claim isn't paid because it was a pre-existing condition. So it says, what kind of insurance do you have now? Is it an employer group plan? Is it an individual plan? And when did it start? And when will it end? But then it says, if it's not ended yet, leave this date blank. So if the thing is going to start next week and this insurance is going to end next week, you have to leave it blank. But people don't read that into the question. This is why I cannot hand this paper to somebody and ask them to fill it out. A non-insurance pro is going to get confused. They're going to put things in little squares that don't belong there. The insurance underwriters are going to take great pleasure in turning down their application for coverage. And then it says, finally, question six, are you within 6 months of your enrollment in Medicare Part B or otherwise qualified for open enrollment, or are you guaranteed issue as an eligible person as described in Part 7? And that's a yes or no answer. If you answer it yes, then you do not have to complete all the medical questions that they have at the top of page 3. So it is, it behooves you to do this during an open enrollment period so you don't have to answer any medical questions. But at the top of page 3, we have 13 medical questions, and I'm not even going to go through those because my goal is to catch people in time so they don't have to answer any medical questions. Now, of course, let's suppose they have a medical plan that's costing them an arm and a leg. And they're saying, Jesus, I hate it. Every time I write a check to these people, it's costing too much money. I've heard Doug Jones talk about a high deductible Medicare supplement. Sounds like it's right up my alley and it costs like $50 a month. How do I get that? Well, the way you get it is to fill out this medical questionnaire. And I would walk through that with you if you contacted dbj@mlmmailbag.com and said, I'd like to consider getting rid of my expensive Medicare supplement and taking your high-performance GTO Medicare supplement that's going to cost me like $50, $60, $40 a month. It all depends on where you live and how old you are. So if you want to switch plans to get a much less expensive Medicare supplement plan, then we will be talking about these medical questions, asking if you've got diabetes requiring more than 50 units of insulin daily. Within the past 2 years, have you been diagnosed or treated for internal cancer, melanoma, leukemia, alcoholism, drug abuse, cirrhosis, mental or nervous disorder requiring psychiatric care? Have you been advised to have kidney dialysis? Those are just two of the 13 questions. So if you decide you want to get out from under your expensive Medicare supplement and take one of the Doug Jones specials, we will be going through the medical question. So then it says, all right, is your prior insurance coverage terminating? Are you doing it voluntarily? or is it being taken away from you? In other words, is the insurance coverage that you have now involuntarily ending, or is it something you're doing voluntarily, like you're deciding to retire? And it's asking for a document from the prior carrier if it was involuntary and they sent you a letter saying, you're not going to be our client anymore as of next month, then they want a copy of that letter just to prove that you had qualifying coverage so that nobody is going to question payment for ongoing pre-existing conditions. And then we go on, that's page three. We get to page four. Oh, you take a break on page four. Basically, it's a bunch of boilerplate that takes up most of the page. And down at the bottom, it says the application was signed at what city, in what state, on what date, how much money was paid with the application, and then what's the total premium. And then they have a place for the applicant to sign it, which I always highlight in yellow. And then the next page is asking me, you didn't sell this guy too much insurance, did you? So it's saying, list any other health insurance policies you sold to the applicant, which are still in force. Next question, list any other health insurance policy you sold to the application, or the applicant, in the last 5 years, which are no longer in force. Tell us whether or not you've met the people face-to-face. And then give us your name, your agent number, and you sign it, and tell us where to mail the policy. So then you think you're done, but no, we're on page six. And basically it's more boilerplate, but this is for the applicant. And it would be nice if applicants read all of this stuff and understood every word, but basically I feel as though I've done a good enough job that I don't mind sloughing off page six and page seven, which has more boilerplate. It's all about the eligibility, and it's all legalese, and it's the kind of stuff that your average insurance applicant does not want to be bothered with. It's the whole reason Medicare for the Lazy Man exists, and people are generally too lazy to read all this boilerplate. Finally, because this company won't let me fax an application in without a bank draft authorization, I then have to ask for their bank name, their checking account, the name of the account holder, and the ABA routing number on their account, as well as their account number. Now, I could use a check, a voided check that they gave me, or they could pay me with a check, but then I would have to mail the application into the underwriters. And frankly, when I fax it, it gets there and somebody, one of these mole people, starts working on it right away. And it's just better. So I tell people, here's why we should do a bank draft authorization. And, you know, a lot of people say, I don't want somebody reaching into my checking account. Why should I allow them access to my checking account? And what I tell them is, on my calendar, I'm going to put down next month, after your policy is issued, I'm going to call the insurance company and say, change your payment method to sending you a bill. If you want to get a bill, then we'll just mail you a bill, and I will have to remember to call in there and ask the insurance company to change your mode of payment. And then we have another little form. This is like page eight, I guess. It's called a HIPAA authorization. It's an authorization for the release of health-related information. Now, between the lawyers, the insurance company lawyers, and the insurance company mole people, or as we lovingly call them, the underwriters, why in the heck would you need a HIPAA authorization for release of health-related information if you are not answering the medical question? Well, this particular company, this illustrates how different companies have different personalities and different requirements. The lawyers that work for this company force us to get a signature on this HIPAA form because of the moderately sensitive information that we actually are extracting from the applicants. And that's going to be a Social Security number, a Medicare identifier, and a few things like that. And I said, well, that's not health related. Well, the form existed, so we just use it. You know, don't worry about it. Just get another signature. They don't understand. All of this stuff adds up to additional time and potential irritation for the client. So we finally got into the back of the application. In Illinois, there's a whole other two-page form called an outline. Randy's had experience with that because we often do business with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, and they require an outline. But in this case, I'm thinking, okay, California, they don't require that same kind of form. Now, here's what the company does require, though. they require that I send certain documents to the applicant. And I generally do it by email along with a cover letter saying you can delete all of this stuff if you want to, or you can read it if you like to. That's fine with me. Either way is fine. But I've told you all the high points. That's what Medicare for the Lazy Man is all about, letting you know all the things that are important for you to know and skipping over the other stuff. So there's a 3-page company brochure. Talks about how great the company is and talks about Medicare supplement plan. There's an outline of coverage. That's enough paper if you printed that out to choke a mule. And because it's got about 3 pages of coverage description for each of all the 10 Medicare supplement plans this company sells. And so you don't, when it's an outline of coverage, you get 3 pages for every plan. You can't just pick the plan you want and ignore the rest of them. So you're going to get quite a slug of paper if you press print on your computer. If it's replacing another Medicare supplement from another company, then there's another form to fill out. And then we have the HIPAA form. They beat you with that again. They say, make sure you don't forget to do that. Make sure you don't forget to send the outline of coverage. Make sure you don't forget to send the government book, Purchasing Health Insurance for People with Medicare. Well, that you can get from my website, but that's another thing I have to give everybody. And it's also they have a nice little annuity that they want me to pitch. So this is what the sales process is going to be like. Believe me, people, I try to shorten it, but if I were to go through every item and take the time to write down the answer that you give me, your name, you know, how do you spell that again? Your middle initial. It's going to take us a good hour or so. So when you deal with the Medicare for the Lazy Man as your agent to purchase your insurance, your Medicare supplement insurance, I think you're going to appreciate the fact that when I have a questionnaire and you put the answers down, that I am cutting probably 3/4 of the normal time off of the whole process. So it's going to be much less painful for you. At least that's the feeling I want to leave you with, that I've done all the work so you don't have to suffer the consequences of taking my services as your agent with my extraordinarily inexpensive product. It will not be an unpleasant experience for you, as long as you understand I got to ask you a whole bunch of questions. So I'm worn out and ready for a nap, Randy. It's just, this is the life of an insurance agent. I know it looks glamorous. It looks like the kind of fun that most people envy having.
I know. It. I mean, literally, I am breathless after hearing all the information that you have to gather.
I tried to slide past all the complicated ones, but it's impossible to do it in real life. I have to. And this is why you and I are working on an online questionnaire that is almost automated, that will do a lot of the thinking for the people.
Right.
That's what I want to steer them to in the future.
Exactly. Well, as you might imagine, the Medicare for the Lazy Man locomotive is out of steam.
Oh, no kidding. No mailbag today?
No mailbag. Maybe next time. We have used up all our lumber. We have used up, we've got probably 50 miles yet to go before the next water tower. So we better.
Did you ever watch that Walt Disney movie about the gray ghost? I don't know. It wasn't a gray ghost. It was a Major Mosby. No, that was the gray ghost. A bunch of Yankees in plain clothes went down south somewhere and stole a Confederate locomotive and a bunch of freight cars.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Well, your description sounded just like that movie, because they wound up breaking up the wooden freight cars and burning them in order to keep the train moving.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible how they thought of doing that when they ran out of wood.
That's a great story. I love those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was based on a real-life episode, and I think they all got hung. The Confederates caught them just...
That probably, it didn't work out like they wanted, but it made for a great story.
Missed it by that much. Anyway, I'm sorry. You're closing things down, and I'm yakking, so I'm going to stop now.
Dear. Well, I don't want to close things down, because all of this information is very critical. And I guess most importantly is people need to understand that you are simplifying the process dramatically. Because if I had to sit down before that 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 page document and try to discern what I was supposed to answer and how I was supposed to answer it, I mean, literally, I would be, I don't want to do it.
Yes, I'll go without insurance. Maybe I'll never get sick.
No, maybe I won't ever get sick. I won't need Medicare. No, please don't do this to me.
The one thing is, I have to hope that none of the insurance company mole people or lawyers listen to this episode, because what I'm basically doing is saying your valuable process that you worship, well, I'm cutting the teeth out of it, and they're not going to want to hear that.
Well, so, probably not. Probably, but the folks in the audience, they're going to love that because it makes their life a whole lot easier. And you make our lives a whole lot easier when you listen to the podcast. We certainly do appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. You were very quiet and attentive. We didn't have to reprimand anybody for being too noisy, like in the local library.
I'd like to think they're all reading the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020.
In the local library, maybe they are. You never know.
Pages are turning.
Yes, I hear them now. But so thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And at the end of the day, what you need to do today is go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or both, I don't care which, and you need to acquire copies of Doug's book and maybe the audio, maybe the Kindle, maybe all of it. It's all great information, and you can use it in various different settings. But anyway, having said all that, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy, sole proprietor of the Medicare for the Lazy Man.com. Bye-bye.